to get messy and show the world you growing as an artist. And you're free to be yourself. You got a dream, you need to start it. Stick together. Get Messy says you're formally invited to a community where you can find people that spark the feel of excitement. Too many art supplies, not enough time. No, it's tough, and so you must find a way to feel some connection. We got a lot of people with the same kind, a great mind. We're here for you, a platform so we can hear your views. Time's yours, forget chores. I know you bored of them same rules.
Welcome back to the Get Messy podcast. I'm your host, Kaylee Gray. I am the fairy art mother at Get Messy Art Community. And today I am talking with Iris Fritchie-Cassens, and she, oh man, okay, prepare yourself. If you are a perfectionist, which I am guessing that you are, you're going to want to listen to this. You're going to want to take notes. So if you're driving while listening to this, I recommend maybe playing it again when you've got a pen and paper, or making use of the voice notes app on your phone. It's great. It's great for me, and that's how I know that's going to be great for you too. Iris is a London-based mixed media artist who lives in the heart of Bloomsbury with her beautiful family. That includes her husband, her two kids, and her one cat. She's passionate about art for self-expression and self-discovery. Iris's art practice is an extension of her wish to get to know herself better and through it find a deeper connection to others. In her studio vlog, she shows people how she makes her art and lives her creative life. She loves using art and words to convey and understand her feelings as a human. In this, she deliberately includes the experience of difficult or taboo emotions and times when being creative is a struggle. Iris is passionate about inspiring others to live their own authentic creative life. By sharing both the joys and struggles, she hopes to enable other artists to look further and go deeper within their art, irrespective of whether they're beginner or more experienced. In her spare time, because this woman clearly has loads of spare time, she likes to sing in the choir, go rollerblading, play video board games or D&D, and find the perfect gin. She's currently obsessed with daring to paint bigger, that one cheap and knackered brush, gouache, and her red Prismacolor pencil. In this podcast, we are specifically talking about Iris's experience as a recovering perfectionist who makes intuitive art. And I feel like perfectionism and intuitive art are contradictory. So I was so excited to talk to her about this. I am a massive fangirl of hers. You should definitely check out her studio vlogs. They are so inspiring, and they're definitely going to encourage you if you've been thinking about creating via video. That's a good place to start. She also sells her stickers and she sells her original artwork, as you'll hear us talk about. So check this out, look her up, look at her art, and just be encouraged by our conversation. Welcome, Iris. I'm so happy to talk to you today.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited, actually. I'm really excited about this.
Me too. I think you have I like you because you've got a lot of excitement and it comes through in your art and what you do. So I'm excited about our chat today.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm really excited, especially to talk about your recovering perfectionism, like your whole recovery. And I love calling it a recovery because that's what it is. And yeah. I think I'm not going to put words into your mouth. Tell me what recovering perfectionist means.
It mostly means that it's a process and a journey. I recently, I've had such a struggle with my art journey, with my kind of being a public artist who puts things on the internet and who tries to make YouTube videos and stuff. And I've had such a struggle with trying to find the right thing for me. And I always felt like I had to be some kind of guru if I wanted to be more than just someone who just paints for themselves, but somebody who puts their art online and who writes blog articles and makes videos and who does teaching, especially. I mean, that's the whole all-encompassing thing. I always felt like I had to have all the answers. I had to be a guru. I had to tell people how to do it. And it's always felt so wrong to me. And it's always felt so like heavy. And it's more recently that I realized I don't have it all figured out. I mean, I realized that a long time ago, actually, that I don't have it all figured out. But I realized that it was okay to broadcast that to the world, because that is the most honest thing I can say. It's, I am doing this art thing. I enjoy it, but I don't have it all figured out. And that's just what I have to share with the world. And that's kind of what it means to be a recovering perfectionist. It's like being able to put that out there. I am a huge perfectionist. I don't want to let it stop me, because unfortunately I'm not the type of perfectionist that just makes things perfect and puts perfect things out there. No, I'm the type of person who just doesn't do anything, because I feel so weighed down by like it has to be perfect. So that's kind of the in a nutshell.
Yeah, I totally, totally relate to you. Like, why are we cursed with perfectionism if we can't be perfect? It seems ridiculous.
I know. It should be the best recipe for success, right? Being a perfectionist.
Right? No, but it's a lie. And I think our whole lives we're told that perfectionism is the way. It's the only way to do things. You have to be perfect. And then we kind of figure out, wait, there's no such thing as perfection. And secondly, like, it's boring as hell. Perfection's boring.
Yeah, and it also, it feels like, there's this fairy tale that I read to my kids, and there's like this troll island, and there's stone steps towards the troll island, and there's one step that you're not allowed to step on because it flips and then you fall into water and you drown. And I feel like that's what perfectionism is. It's like carefully going on the steps, and then all of a sudden there is one that makes you fall down and you're not supposed to step on them, that one. And it's like, oh, I kind of remember which one that was, but not really. And then it's just so paralyzing.
Yeah.
Rather than just like skipping merrily along, just doing your thing, you know?
Right. So what kind of steps do you go through in your mind when you're like, oh, this is maybe my perfectionism talking? How do you fight against that? And how do you move forward in your recovery?
Well, funnily enough, I most of the time don't even notice it, because it's almost as if I have this experience of myself. Sometimes everything goes really well and I'm really into what I'm doing. And that's when the perfectionism is absent. So everything feels great. But then when things start to feel not great, it isn't like I go like, it's my perfectionist self. No, I just go like, you know, I'm bad. Why was it going well yesterday and not today? I suck. I shouldn't be doing this. And it's really interesting, because it's like, you'd think that I'd have figured it out by now, that like, oh, you know, perfectionism is rearing its head. But no, I don't actually hardly notice. And it takes a little bit of having to go through the sucky bit where I think I'm crap and everything is bad. And sometimes it's not like I can do a technique for that and then it goes away. It's more like, okay, I can become aware of it. I can recognize that there was another day where it felt completely different. I can recognize, oh, I think this is my perfectionism, or like this, you know, and perfectionism, it turns up in so many different guises. So it could be like just feeling bad about myself, or feeling like I have no motivation, like all of a sudden my motivation's gone, that kind of thing. And it's just recognizing it, and then kind of like sometimes I just have to write off whatever I'm doing, like that day. Like I thought I was going to be productive and I thought I was going to do amazing things, and I'm just not. And then I think giving that permission to not have to have consistent good days, amazing output or whatever, then it paves the way for maybe having a better day the next day. And I feel like not holding on so tightly to like every day has to be perfect, every day has to be the same, I have to be the same amount of productive every day, has actually made, ironically, it's actually made things a bit more even, where I don't fall into week-long or month-long holes. I fall into maybe 1 or 2 days, and then, you know, it kind of blooms again. So that's been nice to kind of experience. It's not something that I'm doing consciously or deliberately. It's just, yeah, kind of that happened.
I love the way you say it blooms again. Oh, that makes me so, my heart so happy. I also really like when you spoke about the fact that sometimes, or all the time, you just have to go through the sucky bit. Like, you just have to do it. And being someone who is more advanced in terms of going against your own perfectionistic nature, it doesn't mean that you have it figured out, or it doesn't mean that you're not going to have it. It just means that you know that it's coming, and you know maybe you can look back and see what it is. It doesn't mean that you're never going to feel perfectionist again.
Exactly. And I feel like that's such a lie that we're told, or I don't know if other people feel like that, but when I grew up, it was like, you know, the holy grail was to be perfect, basically. Like when you are an adult, like when you turn 18, you're going to have it all figured out, and you're going to be super consistent, and like the achievement of happiness isn't necessarily a range of feelings that you can feel. It's more like now you're going to be consistent all the time. Like happy is going to be the thing that you've achieved, and then it's going to be there every day. And I think that, I don't know, letting go of that and unpacking that and realizing that what I want to be is a kind of feeling emotional person rather than a consistent person has, you know, it's been painful, actually. Like I still kind of feel like, but no, it must be out there. But, it, you know, accepting it has actually made things better overall.
Oh, man, yes. So how do you think your the type of art that you create, how do you think it plays into screwing perfection?
Well, that it's kind of, it was a conscious choice. So a few years ago when I started doing art, so I went through art, a phase of doing art that I didn't like I was such a beginner. Actually I have a piece here. It's because I'm going to be painting over stuff. I know this is a podcast, so people can't really see it, but if they're seeing it on the video, then they can see this is like a really old piece where I was like, oh, so beginnery, you know? And so I went through a phase of hardly making art. But when I did make art, I'd be like, ugh, I don't really like it. And then at a certain point, I started taking a few courses and I started making art that I liked. And it was very pretty and very pristine. And I would spend loads and loads of hours on getting the shading right and getting the, you know, sketching faces that were like nicely symmetrical and things like that. And then at a certain point, it was such a conundrum, because I was like, here I have all this art that I feel really happy with in terms of result. It looks amazing. Like, what more can I want? And I was getting that feedback as well. Like people were like, oh, wow, that looks so nice, that kind of thing. And yet it didn't feel satisfying. It felt like just the process, like the process didn't feel satisfying. The result I liked, but the process, it was like I was just working towards this kind of perfect thing. And then I realized I needed to start enjoying the process. And I thought, okay, the way I can do that is to consciously let go of perfection, because I had noticed that when I was sitting, it was the meticulousness of it that just made me feel like, ugh, you know, like when you're trying to thread a needle, it's so precise. And it kind of, it makes me physically just kind of go, ugh. And so I gave myself permission to no longer do things symmetrically and to deliberately make things wonky. And I would draw a face and then I would go over it with a palette knife and paint and just deliberately mess it up and see if I could achieve more kind of a raw look that way. And it worked. It was all of a sudden I was like, oh, I'm enjoying this process. And that doesn't mean I'm letting completely go of what the end result looks like. Obviously, I have an aesthetic, I have a style, I am working towards a certain look, but that look kind of happens organically if I manage to let go during the process. And I still notice it sometimes where I get way too precise and I'm like, oh, I'm doing that thing again where I'm just noticing that feeling. If it doesn't feel satisfying and it feels like where I'm thinking too much, like, oh, what should I do next? Oh, this needs to look a bit more this. And then I just, usually what I do is I take a palette knife and some white paint and I just like grungify it up. And then I bring back the things that I like and I leave covered the things that it covered up that I didn't like. So yeah, that's kind of how it's, how it influenced my style.
So what would you recommend to someone who feels like they want to let go while they're painting?
It's so difficult because I wish I had like, oh, well, this is just what you do. And I think that's like, it's the, it's the thing we wish for. It's the, like, this is the checklist, or this is the one button that you press. I think that my biggest advice would be to not be so attached to what it is that you've got in front of you. Because the thing is, you made it. You might not be able to make the exact thing again, but you're still you who is making art that is meaningful to you. And if listening to that inner voice that says, oh, I want to use green, or oh, what would happen if I'll feel like using that supply, or like if I just put a big blob of fluorescent pink here, like what would happen? I think it's listening to those little inner ideas and not talking yourself out of them that brings you closer to a process and an artwork that you're then going to feel like, yeah, I really put myself into it, and it's really a representation or an expression of myself rather than just about the end result.
I like the idea of really listening to yourself, because sometimes we really do stuff those voices deep, deep, deep inside of us, especially with what society tells us, what the patriarchy tells us, all of that. And so taking that time to listen and also to encourage our voices to speak up so that we are able to hear them.
And they speak more the more you listen.
Mm-hmm.
It was a real process for me to start to discover how much I was talking myself out of things. I didn't even know I was doing it. It was just like, it was as if there was some truth voice inside my head that was like, no, of course you, like, of course you don't use that color right now because that wouldn't go. Or like, of course you don't do that because that would spoil what you've done. Or of course you don't do that because you never use that supply. So like, what do you think you're doing? So, and of course those are like inner critical voices, but I didn't recognize them as such. And it's kind of like recognizing when I have an idea and then also recognizing when I'm trying to talk myself out of an idea. It's almost as if like there's been like a person who's like here, like this head is talking at you and you're like, oh my God, it's like I never realized it was like right there, right next to you.
Yeah, that voice is a dick. Such a dick. Such a dick. Because, I mean, you know, we're nice people. We're not going to like say something like that to a friend. So why are we telling us this? Like, why?
I know.
Man, my life coach, I've been working with a life coach now for a year, and she calls it the primitive brain, which is so helpful because then you also don't beat yourself up about beating yourself up, because it can become such a loop.
I know, yeah. And it's so, okay, so it's basically, it's just someone who's going, ugh.
Yeah, or like a toddler, right? Like if a toddler is shouting, I want to jump off the cliff. You're like, no, probably not a good idea, but you're not going to say, you idiot, don't jump off the cliff. You're going to be like, okay, so you want to do that, but probably not a good idea. You know, you if you treat that automatic dick brain of yours like a toddler, then it's helpful for separating it. And
and that's such a good point, actually. So the two things, it's like, would you talk to a friend like that? Would you talk to your kids like that? No. It's like my kids, like they've got this budding creativity, and I'm like, am I gonna squash that with a voice like that? No. Like I can already see they have voices like that inside themselves, and like they're, you know, they're little, and it's like, where does that voice come from? Like, so it's really, you know, like it's so good to kind of see that outside of yourself to then say like, no, I don't want to do that to myself, even if you still do. I mean, I still do as well. And also what I find interesting with kids is they'll say anything. They will be very honest about things. So it's also about learning to not take things like that so personally. It's like my kids can poke at my belly and go like, oh, squidgy belly. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, it is kind of. So, and it's been such a revelation that you can hear someone say something that in some context you might feel like, oh wow, that's really judgmental, or I feel really hurt, and yet you can kind of laugh it off and you can go like, yeah, you know, yeah, that eye is weird on my painting, it really is, isn't it great, you know?
yeah Well, tell me, how else are you nurturing creativity in your children?
So they're very different, and I think I never got the encouragement to really be truly creative. It was kind of like, I think my mum would have been quite excited if I was creative, but then it would have kind of been like, yeah, you do your thing. Like, oh, that's nice, you know, rather than a real interest. And what I try to do with my kids is to show real interest. And it's easy because I am really interested, but I do think that that really helps. And, you know, that you read things, like, especially if you're a parent, you've probably read the things where you say, like, you know, praise the effort, or praise specific things rather than just going like good job or, you know, very nice. Like, I try to specifically say like, okay, I really like how you worked so hard at that. Or I really like how you sat down for 30 minutes and spent 30 minutes straight. Or I really like the way you drew those eyes, or the way you solved that problem, that kind of thing. So I really try to do that. And then also things like, you know, if they paint or draw or do something that I think is great, or where I can see that they really like it, I hang it up, you know, or I frame it or put it on the pin board. I think that's such an endorsement. And, you know, it's so simple. You can give your kids a great feeling just by being interested and by acknowledging what they're doing.
Hmm. I think these are good tips for ourselves too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Pin it up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. And how are you finding time then to live a life, have children, have a life, and still make art then?
So it's, I've been lucky in the current situation, actually. Well, lucky in quotation marks. So I run a business with my husband, and it's usually made me very busy, and I haven't had much time for art. Art has had to come in evenings and that kind of thing. Apart from one day a week. For a few years now, I've had one day a week, but one day a week is like way not enough. But because we've not been very busy, because what we do relates to, like, you know, events and things that can't happen at the moment, I've had a lot of time to spend on my art and on my art business, which has been really, really good. It still makes me realize, though, that I have so little time, like with the kids at home, you know, like having to supervise their schoolwork, that kind of thing. It's still just never enough time. And also, it's so difficult to prioritize art time, because especially when you're doing things like, I mean, I'm sure you can relate, like you end up doing the business things, you end up doing the marketing things, and the making art time actually always takes a back seat. So I'm trying to really prioritize art. I'm not quite succeeding yet, but I'm trying to.
I mean, from our side, you're succeeding.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I know it can look like I'm quite prolific. It's because I make art really, really quickly. I don't sit and spend like a week on one art piece. I'm like, you know, one art session and it's usually done. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think making quick art is a very good hack for people that don't have time.
Yeah.
So tell me more. Let's talk more about business and art.
Mm.
How do you separate the two? I think I saw there's a podcast, Emily Jeffords. I'll put her name in the show notes in case I'm butchering it. But she always says your creative business is only as strong as your creative practice.
Yeah, that is such a good point. And that's what I have to keep reminding myself about. It's like, it all starts with my art. Like, and it's something that I've had to learn, and especially as a teacher, because when I teach, the temptation is like, oh, what have I not taught before? Like, what's new? You know, oh, I'm gonna teach people how to use a jelly plate. But I don't use a jelly plate normally. So why am I going to be teaching people how to use a jelly plate? That makes no sense. And it's kind of like giving myself permission both to practice my art as something that is essential to my to me, you know, first of all, but also to my business, and then to also the permission to do my thing, and to not every time I teach to have to invent some new thing. No, people probably want to learn from me because they want to learn about my thing, not about some other thing. So it's kind of giving myself permission for that and putting the importance on that, and also realizing that because I recently got into sticker making, and I was like, I had all these plans, like, okay, I'm going to design a sticker set for this and a sticker set for that. And then I realized I don't want to make designs for stickers. I want to make stickers of the art that I've already done, mm-hmm. because that is the most true way of utilizing my creative process and putting it out there in the world. Making something just because, oh, I'd like to put something else in my shop that people can buy. It just feels like, that's not a judgment of people who do that. I admire people like illustrators who can do that, who can create merch, like, create designs and stuff. But for me, that doesn't work at all. And having recognized that has been really helpful.
Yeah. For me too, I'm the same. And I think I've been speaking to a few people about different creative ideas or business creative ideas. And like, for example, writing a book, I'm speaking to someone about that. And I said to her, just do it. Start with the art. Like, as artists, we know this. We know that it starts with art. We know that if we've got a grand idea in our head, it's not building the idea and making sure the idea is perfect and making all the to-do list items and then going to the studio. We know we just have to show up and we'll figure it out. And so yeah. I think with creative businesses, and I love what you were saying about the stickers, make the art first and then change their form and change the way that they can be distributed and all of that. And similarly with I can't speak English today, apparently, but with teaching, right? You teaching about jelly plates, I go through the exact same thing. It's hilarious. Where I'm just like, yeah, maybe I do jelly plates. No, I don't do that in my own practice. It's weird. Is focusing on what's happening in our studio and in our art and what's happening in those quiet times where there's no one watching. And then we bring it to the world and let them watch rather than the other way around. I would like to be one of those people who can do it the other way around too, though. That seems like very efficient.
It seems very... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like then that's like the mark of a real business person. I'm like, nah, I just.
Right. I wonder what it's like for other businesses because, artists tend to be more flowy. And I wonder if other business people have the same struggles. But tell me more about your vlogs. I want to ask you about vlogs because I'm so keen to make vlogs. And I think that I have recorded so much footage. And I just can't.
I'm already a fan, even though you haven't actually made any yet. I'm like, I really, because that's the thing. It's like, I see all these artists and I'm like, oh, I wish they would do vlogs because I really want them to. And like most people don't. Like it's because it's time consuming and it's exposing and it's, difficult. But it's so nice to get a glimpse into other people's kind of creative lives and stuff. And also I'm starved for vlogs, which is why I make my vlogs really. I'm starved for vlogs where people show their creative process and what they think and what they're doing and kind of like what their life and just them as a person as well. And a lot of vlogs that I've watched, they're very aesthetic and they're very nice, but they are kind of just like, and then I did this, and then I did this, and then I did this. And if you have a really interesting life, maybe that's interesting, but I'm kind of like, yeah, but tell me how you felt. Like, tell me what that was like for you kind of thing. So that's what I find interesting, kind of beyond just the pretty aesthetic. I mean, not that my vlogs have a pretty aesthetic. I'm like, I'm always down on myself for this. Like, oh, my house is a mess and it's not designery and the lighting is all wrong. But the reason I started vlogging was basically because it was a few months into our lockdown in the UK. And I found myself being incredibly unmotivated. I was just not doing anything. I was like, okay, all of a sudden I have all this time. Am I making art with this time? No. Am I doing something productive? No. And I don't know what else I was doing at that point in time, but it wasn't much. And so I realized I needed to be witnessed, I guess. I needed someone with me there to kind of for me to not feel so alone whilst I was doing scary things. And I think at that point in time, my art had become a bit scary to me, like to go and do it. So I started rolling the camera to kind of have someone there who was witnessing me do it. And it actually really worked. So the initial reason was so that I would just do some creative work. And then at a certain point that became easy, and that no longer became the reason why I was vlogging. I was actually vlogging because I enjoyed it. And I also, it's about record keeping as well. And that's why I also put things about my personal life and my family and things, you know, that don't necessarily have to do with art in my vlogs, because I imagine myself in 10 years time, 20 years time, looking back on these vlogs and just having this little slice of life, you know, slice of art life, but also just slice of personal life. And that would feel so meaningful. So I started making them for the first reason, and then I continued making them for that reason. And now I also realize I really enjoy editing. I used to hate editing, but because I'm making something that is so personal to me, and I'm just pleasing myself. Like, I'm sure I could have a much bigger audience if I started pleasing other people, but I just want to make these for myself, you know? And so I'm really enjoying when I get to edit. I'm like, oh, I'm going to be in a good mood in a minute, because I'm going to be like, you know, putting little bits of music under, you know, things. And I love putting in, you know, humor through editing. So with like, stopping the music or like starting the music or having a funny music under something funny. Like I love playing with that and learning about that.
Mm. Ooh, selfishly, I am so excited about this conversation because I feel like it's unlocking something for me. I think, yeah, focusing, if we go back to like focusing on the art, like you were saying, you needed to get back creating. That's a good place to start for vlogging. That's a good place. Mm. And it can evolve and reasons can change, like things always do. I think I'm going to take that with me.
I think that's so important as well, because I think I've, you know, obviously, like you look at my YouTube channel and it looks like I've been putting out vlogs pretty regularly since I started, which was, I think, July or August. But what you don't see is the kind of the peaks and troughs of how I feel about it. So there have definitely been times where I was like, oh, I don't really want to do this anymore. I don't have any more ideas. My vlogs aren't as good as blah, blah, blahs, or the growth in audience isn't as good as these other people. So obviously comparing myself, but also just kind of like feeling like my vlogs had to be something specific.
Mm.
And that's when I kind of made two rules for myself, I guess. One was what I just said, like I'm making them for myself. I really want them to be watched. I really want people to enjoy them. But the person that I am satisfying when I am making them and when I am making my music choices and deciding what to put in and what to leave out, the person I'm satisfying is me. And the second thing is that I made a really strong boundary with myself to only vlog if I was feeling like it. And if I feel like, oh, I should vlog this. Oh, I'm doing something interesting. I should vlog this. I don't vlog it. And it's difficult because sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm doing such good work. Like, I wish this could be in my vlog. But I know that adding that to it, it will take the positive feeling out of it. So I've been really like, you know, that's like a hard boundary for me.
Oh, I love hearing it. I love hearing this. I can totally relate. I had a food blogger. I used to be a food blogger back when I lived in South Africa in Cape Town. And I made friends that way and it was wonderful. But something happened in that every time I cooked, I had to firstly cook in daylight because I wanted to photograph it. And then, so either we would just end up eating like nothing, like chips for dinner, because I didn't want to waste good food on not being able to photograph it. It was this ridiculous cycle. And when I left South Africa, I stopped food blogging. And it took years for me to be able to cook good food again just for myself and just for pleasure. So I think similarly, that stupid word again. But going back, I mean, vlogging was a new creative avenue for you. But for any new creative avenue, just going in and doing it for yourself, that's the way to do it. And that's the way that it's going to be sustainable. And then you know, fame and money and whatever else can come out of it. But doing it for yourself is the true way to do it and the authentic way to do it.
Yeah, and I think that's been a big part of my journey in everything. Because like when you're saying it like that, I realize that that's like the similarity between all the things that I'm doing. It's been vlogging, it's been teaching, it's been making my own art. It's figuring out how to do it in a way that really is about me and sustains me and nourishes me. And then also, because I'm a real, like, I really crave people's approval and people's interest. Like, it's coming back to where I said, like, you know, how do I encourage my kids? And I feel like I didn't have that kind of interest and encouragement. So that's something that I feel was missing. And that's something that I'm always craving and like wanting. And it's actually, so it's really difficult to be a visible person on the internet who is on the one hand genuinely like sharing art and sharing things that I want to share, but also I know I have this driving thing inside me that wants to be seen and wants to be heard and wants to have attention and stuff like that. And it's really, it's a real challenge to keep that in balance and to not start pandering to get likes or to get views or to get, you know, for metrics basically, because I know that there's a part of me that wants that, but there's also another part of me that knows that even if I get that, it will not feel meaningful. I need to stay close to making the videos that I want to make and making the art that I want to make, because otherwise at the end of the day it will be like those art pieces that I did back at the start of my journey. The result will look, you know, the package will look as if it succeeded, but there will be no content and it will not feel nourishing. So it's important for me to kind of keep that close to me.
That's very enlightened. That's very enlightened. Okay. So are you're making stickers, right? You're teaching and you sell your original art, right?
I have started recently. I've only done art journaling for such a long time, so I don't actually have much art that I could potentially sell. And starting to do art out there on standalone pieces, whether it's canvas or like wood board or that kind of thing, it's like, it's really scary. It's so scary. And I don't know why. Like, I do know why. And cognitively, I know why. But then there's also like, oh my God, just do the same thing that you do in a journal, but just do the same thing, but do it on a canvas. And it's like, it's so hard. It's much harder than you think for me.
Yeah, it's so funny. I feel like you are doing all the things that I am building myself up and finding the courage to do, like vlogging. I also want to sell my original art. So you just ended up doing it. You just did it.
Yeah, well, the vlogging helped. I feel like if I'd have not been vlogging it, I would have felt so scared and I wouldn't have done it. But because I was vlogging it, it was kind of like putting it out there saying like, hey, look, I find this difficult and I'm doing this thing. And, you know, will you hold my hand, please? I think that's and also because I've been vlogging for a little bit now and I've kind of built up a little audience of people who are super supportive of me and they always watch my vlogs and they always comment and they've always got my back and they're always, you know, cheering me on. And it just feels really safe and nice. And I kind of feel like I can do stuff and then they're just going to support me, which is really nice. Oh. I've always heard people talk about that and I never had it. And now I'm like, oh, it's just really, really good and really motivating.
Yeah. Oh, that's so lovely. I can see there's canvas behind you, right?
This one.
That side and the other side?
That's an art journal, actually.
Oh, I like
so
it.
So I'm like, yeah, I wish that was on a canvas because I love it. It's one of my favorite pieces that I've created. I'm really loose and really like using lots of colors and stuff like that, like trying to really bring even more looseness and stuff in my work. But yeah, now the next step is to try and capture that too if I'm not working in a journal, and that's just difficult. Like that's where the perfectionism comes in again. Like I don't even get started. I tried to yesterday. I started, but I was feeling really rubbish, and then I ended up not I wasn't feeling rubbish for that. I was feeling physically rubbish because I was a bit under the weather, and then I was like, oh, I can't do it. And then it just like, but I'll keep going. I'll do it.
Yeah, I understand the struggle. I understand the struggle completely.
Yeah.
But I mean, you could sell prints of that, right?
I could, but I don't feel very enthusiastic about selling prints. I did it once before, and I found it very labor intensive, but also it just didn't really feel exciting. I don't know. Like, I can't really articulate why I don't feel called to do prints. Like, I definitely want to put my art on stickers, and I definitely want to sell my original work, but doing prints, and I want to put it on postcards, but just doing prints, it just doesn't, I don't know. Yeah. It's interesting. I'll have to think about that. Mm. Why? But yeah, no, I don't know at this point.
I mean, that's fair. You listen to your intuition. You don't need to know why. But I think I'll put, for those listening to the audio version of this, I'll put an image of that in the show notes I'll get from you so that everyone can see it's beautiful. It's very beautiful.
Thank you. Raw
and authentic and true. It's, yeah. Mm.
And also there's fear there as well, you know, like where I am, if I'm creating in my journals and I know that, you know, I put everything on the internet, but there's still, like, I know that it's not created in order to sell because it's in a journal and there's a freedom there. And then there's also this fear of, like, okay, what if I now start painting on, you know, separate pieces of paper or on canvas? It's almost like this feeling of, like, selling out, maybe. Like, oh, I'm going to now paint this, like, this really true expression wall, but now I'm going to do it in a way that I can sell. Like, how true is that? And I know that, like, there's obviously negative voices and it's not necessarily based in truth, but it does, you know, it's still a truth that exists inside me, even if it's not an objective truth. So that's quite difficult. Like, that's another thing that makes it difficult to, it's almost like existing with that knowledge of, like, oh, you're fake because now you're trying to do this thing on a canvas. You know, how are you going to be, like, intuitive and true and that kind of thing if that's the thought that you're carrying with you? That's really difficult.
Yeah, I mean, don't you know artists, they're supposed to just work for the love of it and they're not supposed to get any income. They're not really supposed to eat or have a house. I read something by Tara Brach, and she says in there that those thoughts that feel real, right, they're real but not true. Mm-hmm. So that's been helpful for me too, is to acknowledge
real but not that. True. I really like that. I'm going to remember that.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So to wrap us up, if there is someone who's struggling with perfection and she wants to go into recovery, what would be your one tip for that?
I think it's recognizing that you're a perfectionist and then maybe starting to try and think about what would it look like to still be you. You don't have to, like, disavow your perfectionist nature, but what would it look like to be you and to still do things anyway? What would that look like? So it isn't so much of a, like, well, just do this and then you will no longer suffer from being a perfectionist. It's more like, can you understand where you're coming from? And then can you understand what it is that you want to be doing and where you want to be going in spite of being a perfectionist?
That is powerful. That is really powerful. That's a really good way to end. Thank you so much. I feel like so moved by that. And I'm sure anyone listening too would also be. Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for your words and for sharing yourself, for your heart, sharing your art, encouraging us, encouraging me completely with vlogging and with so many ideas. Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you too for a really interesting conversation.